Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. In this podcast, your host, Lori Amin, will interview published authors to chat about their work, journey to getting published, and their book recommendations. If you share a passion for books and always looking for your next read, then join us. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast. Today's guest is Mill Vane. Mill writes fantasy romance, and her latest series is an epic barbarian romance. In this interview, we talk about what it's like to do world building, what was some of the source of inspiration for her latest series, and of course, a roundup of recommendations. Now let's go to an interview. Hi, Mila. Welcome to the What You Read Next podcast.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So happy to have you here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
There's not much to say, really. I was born in Oregon, and I grew up kind of just out in the woods. And our family always had a ton of books, and so I spent my growing up years reading and running around in the forest, and then went to college and started writing. And it's not like a I wish I had like a really great backstory. That's what I give my characters, but my own backstory is just kind of growing up and reading a lot of fantasy romances, fairy tales, and then really wanting to write them. And for a while I thought I was going to go into accounting or business management, but I kept writing on the side, and this is what I ended up doing.
I love it. So what was your journey to get that first book published?
Oh, actually, that's a pretty funny story. I was actually at college, and I had been watching a cartoon, Justice League, and I decided to start writing some fanfic because I had always liked writing, but I wasn't really sure if I could finish a full novel. So I thought, you know what, I'm just going to write this story, this fanfic about Batman and Wonder Woman, of all people, and publish it. And I did. It ended up being like a 60,000 word story. And so I wrote a few of those while I was getting my degree. And one day I got an email from Cindy Huang at Berkeley Publishing saying, I really like your fanfic. Do you have anything original? And I said, and I had been working on something original, and I knew who she was because there was an e-publishing company, Allura's Cave at the time, and they had two of my favorite authors, Angela Knight and Mary Janice Davidson. And I had been kind of following along online as Cindy Huang had kind of picked them up too. And so that was kind of in my head. I was like, you know what, I could do this too. I could, you know, start with an e-publisher, maybe move on to trad publishing. But it turned out that she just had by chance read my fic online and liked my voice and liked my style. And so she wanted to see if I had anything else. And so I did. And I sent her something, and that was my first contract.
That's amazing.
It was like one of those like Cinderella type stories. Yeah. it was like I lucked out. I mean, I'm completely aware of how lucky I was that I kind of just like, and she's still my editor, and I love her, and so it was just like the luckiest break that a writer could get, probably.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So did you end up getting an agent after getting acquired, or?
Right. I got an agent after my first contract. I signed my first contract, which might have not been the way to go. But I mean, I was like, you know, it was like when, at that time, you know, there were a ton of writer like forums, and you could kind of like check what the contract verbiage was. And I kind of knew what I needed to have and what was important. And so I was, you know, okay with it. And then later I started looking for an agent and got an agent.
Gotcha. Yeah. It's like, it's so weird. Like just to walk through publishing, like to see the business side of it is different from just like the writing. Like you just write a novel. Right? You just get published. And you're like, oh, there's all these other aspects that happen, you know, how to get the book published. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember when like, you know, it used to be the thing to get that writer's market book where it was just like this huge tome of like all these agents and advice, and now it's all online and it's really nice, but you know, it was like you had to kind of like know the business side before you could think about even getting into like, well, it seemed like that way to me, or maybe that's my type of personality where I like to know the nitty gritty. And yeah. And actually in college I had been taking the college I was at, they had a master's in publishing and they had their own, you know, press there. And so I was taking courses there through that too. And that was a lot of fun because it kind of got, I saw the back end of everything.
That's fascinating. Awesome. So let's talk about your writing process. Do you follow an outline or do you see where the story leads? Yeah.
I'm kind of like both. I just read like the other day, I think it was George Martin who said that people are either architects or they're gardeners. And one, you know, you kind of like, you really build something. And then the other one, you kind of like go around and find what you need and grow what you need. And I think I'm probably right in between there. When I have a story in mind, I usually have one or two scenes that are really, really strong in my head that I really want to get to, like how they meet or what the black moment is. And then I kind of like, I build in between those spots. And so like, I don't necessarily know when I start a book, how exactly I'll go between point A and point B. But I know that there's going to be this point A, and I know there's going to be a point B, and they're always like the points I get to, what I build the book around. Mm. So it's kind of a little of both, where I do know exactly where I'm going, but not necessarily how I'm going to get there.
That's fascinating. I think it's like when you're diving into fantasy and to romance, like there's like this world building that takes place. And so you're creating something out of nowhere. So...
Yeah, and I really love the world building. I like it as like I kind of call it a top-down process where I just sit there and I ask why, you know, because you know I have this scene in my head, like say when I wrote A Heart of Blood and Ashes, the scene that I pictured was Maddock, the hero, showing up where the heroine was, and he's going to kill her in revenge for something that her family had done. And instead she says, no, let's team up and I'll help you kill them. And so I just kind of start digging at that point. Like, why does she need to do that? You know, what about this world set up this situation where she is in this position where she's going to say that, and he's in that position where he has to try to take it out on her instead of someone else. And so I just like dig down. And then I finally get to a point where I'm at the bottom where I have all my questions answered, and then I can kind of start building again. And then like filling in all the details. It's kind of like, you know, building a house from top down, then you get to the foundation and then you start decorating all the rooms. And that's kind of how I think of world building.
That's really awesome. I'm always curious to hear world building because it's like, it's so intriguing. And at the same time, it can be so like, I don't know, surprising. Like, because you're creating something out of nowhere that may or may not exist, that you're putting together a place where characters are living and you're interacting with things that may or may not exist, and just getting the whole process together.
Right. And I, you know, and sometimes, you know, it's like very technical. Like sometimes I'll know like what's the scientific explanation for what I'm doing or whatever, or but other times it's just like, well, what's going to be fun? And so like, you know, like my world has dinosaurs in it and I have an explanation for it, but I'm not necessarily going to tell everybody because the characters don't know. So it wouldn't make any sense for, you know, me to kind of like come in as this God figure and say, this is how it happens. I mean, I think that kind of ruins some of the magic sometimes. But yeah, so I mean, a lot of times world building is a combination of how is this going to work and what's going to be fun. And a lot of times I'll just throw in what's going to be fun and what's going to cause a problem for my characters, and then how am I going to explain it? And I do, you know, I do all of that back work in my head. Like, how does this work? How can I explain this? If somebody said to me, you know, you have to go to court and talk about how this works, I could do it, but it wouldn't necessarily all end up on the page because a lot of times that's boring. And a lot of times it just leads to more questions of, and you know, you can't have that same suspension of disbelief when you're talking about, when you're having to say, this is how this works. And so you just say, it works, and try to make it as real as possible.
I love it. So you're writing a series. How do you keep track of all the ideas, inspirations, characters, details? You know, how do you keep yourself organized?
You know, most of it is in my head. And that's just because I'm so like visual as I think about the story. Like it's almost, I don't want to say it's a movie in my head because sometimes I see like the words across my eyes, like when I'm writing in my head. But it's a lot like that. So I keep a lot of it in my head, but I also use, so as I'm writing, I use a program, Scrivener, which I think a lot of writers use. And it just has like a handy feature where you can like, you know, have characters listed on the side. I don't use any of the like details of them. Sometimes I'll stick up like an inspiration picture in there so I like know what they look like or something like that. I don't really, or I have maps. Actually, maps are like my big thing. I create maps because all of these are road trips. All of these fantasy books that I'm writing are road trips. And so when I have a map, I have like a really solid idea of how the world works and what it looks like. But when I have a map, I can kind of like, how long does it take someone to get from this point to this point? You know, and I match it kind of to the plot. You know, they go, you know, what happens here? What happens here? What happens here? And then if I can also put it on a map, it's almost like plotting out the book there. And it's, so it kind of works both ways. It helps me define the world better and talk about what's there, but also have like a road map of the plot as I go along.
I love it. So you create the maps yourself, or how do you do those?
I do create them. So this map, for those of you listening, I just showed her a map that I had made. It's a full color map.
Yeah, that's what I did.
So originally I kind of sketch it out. And so that was like 6 years ago. I had this world map and I sketched it out. And so I knew where all the major places were. And then I kind of like made this like Tolkien style map with Photoshop, where they have like all these awesome brushes that you can use for like mountains and things. And so it's like, it's really nice to have like that thing sketched out. And then, so as I write the books and more detail is added, I kind of like add more and more detail and color and information to my map too. And they're on my website. They aren't in the books, unfortunately, but part of that is because they aren't, you know, finished, because I'm working on them as I go along, as I spread out to other areas. But they're on my website, and the full color versions are. And it's just, I think it's just a fun way to kind of visualize the world in a different way. As I'm writing, so it's not just words on a page, it's also how do I make it, I mean, it's visually there on a page in like in a way that we recognize in real life. Like, you know, we look at maps and we're like, this is where grandma lives, or this is where this is happening, whatever. And so you can kind of like also visualize like political affiliations and or like even something as simple as like trade routes or something. How does that affect everything? If they're in the middle of a grassland and there's no roads, how are things getting places? And so it just kind of like makes it easier to say, okay, well, this is when I'm writing this part of the story, this is going to work, or this isn't going to work, or this is here and why. So
this is amazing. I love it. I love the fact that you incorporated different elements into your world, and like there are different tools that allow you to plot. That is not just writing an outline. It's just like thinking about it from the map point of view, from the world building point of view, from the romance point of view, and just like how it all comes together into one final product.
And a lot of that is, you know, just like thinking of in terms of like anthropology, or like I read a book a few years ago. It's just called Salt. And I can't remember the author name because I'm awful with names, but it was a really fascinating look at how salt itself changed so much of the world, you know, shaped like where the money went, you know, where the roads went, you know, and just ideas like that. So I try to like incorporate like, you know, there's a history to this world we're not going to see, but that should be there and that has, you know, made this world what it is. And I should be able to know some of that or think of some of that, even if it never shows up in the books. And so that kind of helps me too.
That's fascinating. So do you share your work along the way, or do you wait to complete it for others to read?
I don't share my work along the way. I I mean, it's really, really rare that I will share my work along the way. I don't want to say that I'm don't have confidence in my own work. It's just that it's such a private thing at first when I'm writing. And then I want to be able to get my ideas out without worrying, is someone going to enjoy this or not? I mean, obviously that's in the back of your head when you're writing a book. How is this going to be received? Is this going to make sense? But it's more like, this is all mine going onto the page. And then, you know, when I get to the editing process, of course, you know, it has to incorporate some of those other elements. But the only time I will share my work beforehand is if I'm really, really stuck or if I'm really, really uncertain about something, such as A Heart of Blood and Ashes. It kind of starts off, I think it's 4 chapters before the heroine even shows up. Mm-hmm. And I was really worried. I was like, is this too slow? Is it too long? Is there too much information? And it actually is, you know, it does have a slow start, and there is a lot of information coming at you in those first chapters. And then I think as soon as the heroine shows up, to me anyway, it's like the book just like takes off a lot more and like has so much more energy in it. So I was worried, you know, should I introduce her sooner, even though I loved the way she was introduced in the book. Mm-hmm. And so I sent that to a couple friends and I said, is this like terrible? And they were like, yeah, you know, you do need to add something to add a little bit more action. So it's not just all talky. And so, you know, that did help me, and it gave me a little bit of an idea of how I should start off the book and add a little bit more action to the beginning, because I knew that there was going to be, you know, a couple of chapters where the reader wasn't going to meet the heroine yet. We wouldn't have any idea who she was yet. And it was just the hero meeting a lot of people. And I wanted to make sure that we knew that there was going to be some action, because it started out with action. So, so it's really rare that I will share.
Yeah, it's okay. Everyone has their own process. So I think that's fine. What works for you, and just keep doing that. And, you know, and I think maybe sharing when you're stuck, that can help. But at the same time, if you feel like you wait till the editing process to get feedback, that's works too. So there's no right way or wrong way to do it.
Yeah, there's no right way. I saw somebody else ask a question that was similar to that. And it was about half and half. Some people, you know, they shared their work. They kind of, you know, they had their group of friends that they exchanged chapters with. And I was just like, that would just like kill a story dead for me. I would be like so like caught up in like what feedback is going to come back that I wouldn't be working on the next part of it. And so, which is funny, because when I wrote fanfic, you know, you post a chapter at a time, you get feedback. And it wasn't like that at all. But now I'm very... I just have a really hard time with it. So.
I feel, yeah. So let's talk about the Gathering of Dragons series. What was the source of inspiration?
The source of
for the series.
I would say the inspiration for the Gathering of Dragons series, it has to come from my childhood. I think that anybody who reads it can see the influence of 80s fantasy movies, especially like Conan or Red Sonja or Willow. You know, just those 80s staples of fantasy that were like sword and sorcery type of, you know, it's just fun adventures. And of course, because I like the romance aspect of it, I went really heavy on the romance. But I would say growing up in the 80s is probably what influenced the most. And just that feeling of wanting to capture that epic adventure type of story, with, you know, monsters that show up and just like crazy things that they have to face and battle, and where everything is kind of raw and visceral, and there's no... And there are like different cultures where maybe some are more primitive or less primitive, and you have the barbarians, or you have like some more like supposedly civilized people. But just having that rawness to the story is what I really enjoy about some of these like 80s movies. And it feels like in a way, you're kind of like going back in time to this retro type of fantasy. But I really wanted to also kind of make it more modern, which is why, you know, I really, really love Warrior Woman, women, and like Wonder Woman has been my like my favorite superhero forever. I mean, since I was like a little girl. And so kind of bringing in a more modern take also on the barbarian fantasy, where it's not just, you know, big man walking around, he's clever, better than everybody else, where it's kind of like a setting where gender isn't such a like a determining factor in what you do with your life. So
let's start with your heroines, because I found them, they're really strong heroines. Like they were like really, they were surprisingly strong for the time period. Like I was expecting someone meek, someone who's just like blah, blah, blah. And both of them are surprising. Like they can be considered weak, or they can be considered coward, or all those different things. But in reality, they were really strong alpha heroines who took charge of things. They're like, you know, in their own way. Like it was just like really subtle, but it was just like there was a presence for them.
Yeah, and that's really important to me. I love, like, and I don't want to say warrior women, and you know, the term strong women has become kind of like toxic in a way to suggest a woman who has to become masculine in order to be strong. And that's not at all what I wanted to depict in any way. It's more that they have this strength of will and mind, and there's no doubt that even if they're physically weaker, like Yvonne, for example, she is physically weaker than everybody around her, but she always has the upper hand in any situation because she's so smart and because she is so perceptive about what's going on around her and why people act the way they do. And so, and then of course you've got Luzanne, who is kind of like the typical warrior woman. She's a soldier, and yet she doesn't have the same fortitude, I would say, as Yvonne did. And so life has just beaten her down, but she's still trying to do the very best that she can to continue on and to keep going. And I think that it's really important to me to show different types of strength too, where sometimes it's like, you know, you don't give up and then you keep going. And then sometimes, you know, you give up, but you keep going too. And because I think, you know, we all, you know, go through these things. And I hope everybody enjoys the books, but the women characters and the female heroines are always the center of the romance for me. And when I write a book, I imagine the heroine and then I think, who is going to be good enough for her? Who is going to be her match? It's not like, I am not hero-centric at all. I'm very heroine-centric when I write. And so I just want someone who is going to be a good match for her, even if they start out kind of like a jerk, like Maddox did. but he, at the end, he has changed enough and grown enough that he's not going to be good enough for her at any point, but you know, he's got to the point where he will be a good match for her and be a good partner for her. And the same with Luzanne. I just, you know, that I think that was a totally different situation, but you know, I just wanted someone who would be a good partner for the heroine. And of course, you know, when you write a romance, you want it to be equal and you want it to have both characters be, you know, grow and become something new, and or not new, but you want them to evolve through mm-hmm. the book. But it's, my focus is always the heroine.
So in the second book, Luzanne and Eryx, how do you say his name?
I just say it's Eryx.
Okay.
It's kind of Eric, but with an extra at the end.
So you picked Second Chance Romance. Why pick that trope for them?
You know, I didn't intend at all to do a Second Chance Romance. In fact, when I first outlined, kind of like got the idea for this story, it was like 8 or 9 years ago, and I had written it out where the premise was essentially the same, where she had been, so the premise of the story is that the heroine Luzanne is, she's kind of a disgraced and exiled soldier because she was blamed for this incredible failed battle. And so the king kind of used her as a scapegoat, and then she was exiled and disgraced. And so that was kind of always the plan. But originally the hero was going to be someone who had lost people in that battle, and so he didn't like her either. And so when they met up again, it was very antagonistic, and he was mean, and kind of like in the first book where they have a very antagonistic relationship. But as I was writing, as I began writing, and this was originally my plan, that they were just gonna like butt heads the entire time. And but she was in such a horrible place. I mean, she was like in such a horrible place emotionally that it felt like I was just like, it was too much, you know, the whole world had beaten her down. And to have the hero add to that was just, it was just like, it wasn't working at all for me. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, what is going to be a better story? And it was that, you know, she was exiled and he was part of the reason, but that he had always loved her and that they had been good friends. And so once that was in my head, then I had to figure out, well, then why did he not go with her, right? You know, she's been disgraced, she left. He knows that she didn't really do what they thought that, what they said she'd done. So why didn't he go with her? And then, so then I had to figure out exactly why he didn't go with her. And that ended up creating kind of a subplot and a thread that I thought was so much better than my original idea anyway. So in that case, it wasn't that I really meant to start out with a second chance romance. It was going to be exactly the opposite, where they were going to be, it was going to be another enemies to lovers story. But I just couldn't do that. And I think that it turned out so much better anyway. I'm much happier with how having to refigure the hero's character forced me to come up with some new ideas about the plot and really the end of the story and how it all ties into the climax. So I was much happier.
I love it. So let's talk about Bella the Goddess. Was this based on a specific mythology, or how do you base, where did you come from?
So when I was creating this pantheon of gods that kind of that do exist in the world and they influence everyone's lives, I don't think that there's like a real like specific analog to her. Like there wasn't anything that I said, okay, well, I'm going to take a Greek pantheon and create my own version of all the characters, or, you know, the Norse or anything else. And it was more like probably like all these ideas of mythology that had combined in my head over the years became, you know, spat out like a few ideas. Like, so Vela's a moon goddess, but she's not like Artemis. I would say if I had to compare her to another goddess, I would say she's more like Athena, maybe, you know, the goddess of wisdom, who's very strong. But there's also, you know, I really like the idea that the gods are kind of fickle, and they have their own problems, and they can be very, very kind, but they can be very, very cruel too. Mm-hmm. So yeah, there wasn't like any one place the pantheon came from. It was more like, you know, I like this type of goddess figure, and I needed like a mother figure, and you know, it's just like kind of creating that kind of mythology, which is, you know, part of the world building and like, how does it work? You know, what's going to show up, and how, what kind of gods would influence them, and what kind of stories would influence them.
So what was the most surprising thing about writing fantasy? So let's talk about book three. What can we expect on the culmination?
See, I don't want to say too much, but
just
give I like it, not in terms of spoilers, but you know, obviously it's been leading up to like a big confrontation, and we are going to get that confrontation with the Destroyer, because I think that'll be, I mean, if it didn't have that, it would be like so disappointing. But I'm hoping that I can make readers cry a lot, and because I'm a little bit sadistic like that, like my joy is readers' tears. But also I want to make them, you know, come away from the story feeling like they really got a complete story, even though, like, you know, those three separate romances, and so the story's kind of broken up, that they really get this, like, huge epic feeling that they went through this this adventure with my characters. And so the first book, you know, kind of introduces everything, and then the second book kind of breaks away, and we don't see a lot of the same characters that we did before. It kind of introduces a new part of the world. And so the third book, the intention is to bring it all back together. And so there's a huge cast, and there's a couple of different places where the action is taking place. And so we will get a third point of view, which should be a lot of fun. And the series is called A Gathering of Dragons. And in the first book, you know, the dragon is this guard for the king. And in the second book, we maybe see a dragon that is real. And so in the third book, we'll see more of how that series title came about. And I think it should be a lot of fun. And I'm really excited for everybody to read it, because I'm just like, this is what I've been planning, you know, evil hand rubbing. This is where it's going.
I can't wait. We have to wait till December, but I can't wait.
Oh yeah. And I'm really excited. I really, it's funny because the third book, when I imagined this series, or when I first thought of this barbarian fantasy world, this book was the first one that I really kind of started imagining and working through in my head, like, who is the hero, who is the heroine. And so I've kind of been, and so I went back and started in a different place when I actually wrote the books. And so finally getting to this book and finally telling this story and seeing it all come out has just been so fun. So I've been, like, waiting to get to this point.
Gosh. That is fascinating. I love that idea of, like, you had something to look for. Like, you've been working towards something, then you're like, oh my God, this is what I've been looking for. Yeah.
All my evil plans are coming to the end.
Yeah. This is awesome. So now let's go to a round of book recommendations. It's an opportunity for you to share with our audience what they should read next. What is your favorite genre?
My favorite genre has to be romance. I mean, but it's romance. Sometimes I have, like, burnouts on romance, and then I often go to mysteries and thrillers and horror. But I always come back to the romance, and especially, like, even in the other genres, when there's, like, that kind of heavy romantic thread, those are my favorite books. I love that. So it's, like, hands down romance is my favorite genre.
What kind of romance? Because romance is a big genre. Like, what would be your go-to romance that you're like, it's my catnip?
Okay, my catnip, like the ones I can't resist. Yeah. Are like Harlequin Presents. So, like, my very first romance I read, I was 8 years old. It was a Harlequin Presents by Carol Mortimer. And it was like, you know, it's hard to describe, like, 70s, 80s style of Harlequin Presents, but, like, they're not very explicit, but there's, like, a lot of just, like, really horrible heroes who are, like, these jerks, and there's, like, the innocent heroines. And I don't know if it's because that's kind of where I started, but that is, like, my guilty pleasure. Like, I just love those. But recently, I started actually, it's not even recently, for years now, I've been reading these Harlequin comics. Like, they do these comics, and it's like everything is distilled down into, like, these, because I also love comic books, and so, like, this is, like, both of my loves combined, where they have, like, these classic Harlequin Presents stories, and they distill them down into comic book form. And I mean, these things, I will, like, even if I'm, like, burned out on romance and I kind of am not in a romance reading mood, I will, like, binge on, like, 15 of these in a night. It's just so much fun. And so I think, you know, that is, like, my catnip. But, you know, historical romance, like, I cut my teeth on Joanna Lindsay. Oh, and, you know, just, like, those old sweeping historicals that, yeah, I mean, they're a lot of fun. And so, like, if I was told, like, you can only, like, have one type for the rest of my life, Oh, it's so hard. It's funny because I write paranormal, and I wrote steampunk for a while, and I write fantasy now, but it might be those, you know, short, angsty, and I think it's because they have so much angst in them. I just love the angst. Like Harlequin Presents, I don't know. They're like the pure fantasy. It's like this distilled fairy tale, and you get all the emotion, and then it's quick and it's over. And then, but I don't know. There's so many. I mean, there's so many that are just so wonderful that it's hard to say. Like, you know, you start thinking of like things like Sherry Thomas or Lisa Kleypas, or actually, I don't even know how to say her last name. Is it Kleypas? Kleypas?
I don't know. I say Kleypas.
So. Like, you know, and then you think of those and I'm like, no, that's what I would take. That's the one I would have. So it's hard sometimes. Or like, you know, a Nalini Singh, like can you imagine like not having another Nalini Singh book ever? No, it would be horrible. So that's why I'm glad there are so many, because you never have to choose.
I love it. What has been a book that you read this past year or last year that you love?
I just read I had this on my to-be-read pile forever, and I just finally read it, and it was Dread Nation by Justine Ireland. Mm-hmm. And so it's this alternate universe, Civil War era tale of a girl fighting zombies. And the voice was just so fantastic to read. It was in first person, and it was so up close and personal, and her voice was amazing. And the story was just fantastic, and I loved all of it. It was like such an enjoyable read. So that was Dread Nation by Justine Ireland. I would recommend it to everybody. And I guess there's the second book out too. So that's like sitting there on my Kindle waiting for me to finish writing my current book and getting out of my deadline so that I can read it.
I love it. Tell us where we can find you online.
I am sometimes on Twitter. I don't really spend a lot of time on Twitter, but I'm on Instagram under author Millavane. Twitter is just at Millavane. And I'm on Facebook. I have a Facebook group. And of course, my website, which has maps and everything, which is millavane.com. And so that's where to find me.
Thank you, Mila, for being on the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad. I'm so glad we had this interview. It was a lot of fun.
If you enjoyed this podcast, feel free to share with friends, subscribe, or rate and review the show. This is the easiest way to support this podcast. Want to join a romance loving community? Want weekly book recommendations, monthly author Q&As, and book recommendation meetups? Make new friends? Then join our Patreon community. To sign up, please follow the links in the show notes. What to Read Next podcast is part of the Frolic Podcast Network. Find more podcasts to love on frolic.media/podcast. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whatyoureadnextblog.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you so much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.